What's good, Bracago? We have a fantastic, awesome interview with somebody who I have been ducking. No, just playing. We have been ships in the night for a decade at this point. One of my favorite folks in the gaming industry, award winner, magical man behind all instruments. We have Chase Bethea coming and hanging out with us, composer, artist extraordinaire. Thank you so much for being on the show, Chase. Excited to have you finally on Photo Me after a 10-year commitment and promise that now comes true. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing great. Actually, yeah, I'm excited. I'm elated. I'm finally here. Finally, the Spawnies want to spend time with me.
So a little bit of background for everybody who's watching the show. Chase and I met literally a decade ago. I forget. It was probably at Indiecade East or something like that.
It was GDC, Lost Levels, because Sean did Alexander Allen put the thing on there. Lost Levels in that hot ass up area thing where I just did my first random guest speaking stuff, and you and Sean were there, and then I did this random talk about working with composers and what it was like, and then he's like, "Hey," he's like, "You exist," and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm here."
And I was like, "Chase, you got to come on the show." And then 10 years later, we see each other at events. I'm like, I'm an asshole, and I forgot to get you on the show. I will promise to get you on the show. And now it has finally happened. I'm very excited to have
my
you.
My champ, Michaud.
So I'm a man of my word. I might be slow, but I'm a man of my word.
What does they say? Better late than never.
Better late than never, right? Actually, this is a better time to have gotten you as opposed to when I first started, because I know what the hell I was doing. Now I know how to actually ask questions in a reasonable way. So, first of all, it's been really cool to see your journey within the video game industry and the video game space. Like, the cool thing is, like, getting a chance to meet people and then kind of, like, poke in and out of their lives, their professional lives, while they're doing a lot of this work and seeing them grow and get into those spaces. But for the folks who may not know your work intimately, how did you get into the space? How did you start to become, you know, this composer that is literally a person in the gaming industry that folks are like, you got to work with Chase? How did this become a part of your lived experience?
So before I answer that, I just want to say one thing, because I know I don't want this to be a continued thing in case someone comes up to me later. The last name is pronounced Bethea. So I want to lay that out.
Thank you.
When I work with Chase Bethea, then you go to there.
Got it.
And so it just comes about, what I realized is that I knew when I was entering the industry is that I was coming in with a level of professionalism that I was groomed to do for a very long time. My mom had trained me in terms of, like, she gave me some brief management things and understanding that world. I used to do hip hop and R&B for several years before transitioning to the games. But trying to break into that, it was never really accepted. It wasn't accepted for my personality. It wasn't accepted for what I was doing. Even though I was really good at what I was doing, I was doing all that stuff. Everyone had always told me it sounded like it should be in a video game. So I finally just listened. I was like, fine, I'll try video games. And then when I did submit the work that I was doing, in terms of, it wasn't even for R&B style music, it was something that I specifically wrote for a game, it worked and it landed, and it ended up being my first ship game. And even with the internship that I did at Mobotori Games, I think in around 2011, that was something that I was able to pull off and do well at the internship, just before learning a little bit more about the industry of how to work into it. So how does it come about, when I think now is the point where people are saying, yeah, they want to work with me, is because I'm efficient, I'm professional, I communicate well, I have good soft skills, I'm just cool to kind of just be flexible and knowledgeable about the things that I know. I'm a player first, so most people, I was writing music on the Game Boy in 97, on the Game Boy camera, So I know game music very well because it's what I studied. Most people were doing, like, instruments around the age of six. I was playing games. So I'm a player first at heart. And I think that connection is probably something that people understand and resonate to, because I can connect with those who understand those titles. And if I haven't played that, it's always a genre that I understand of some sort, whether it be strategy or adventure or platforming or whatever the case may be, for any type of game style that they're working on.
So with that knowledge, I think that does make your work a lot different from a foundational standpoint, especially working in games in that way. For, you know, I think a lot of folks, when they think of composers, they think of folks with the kind of traditional classical training, right? They're like all of the pieces that go along with that. What are the kind of connection points that you see between what is traditionally thought of as, you know, make sure you have your brass sections, make sure you have your woodwinds in there, make sure you have all those pieces together, and how that translates over to video game music? Because I feel like those things, with that very digital synthesized sound that you get in a lot of different cases in the video game space, there is some crossover, but they don't fully match up, right? How does that kind of work in your mind for translating or connecting those dots for folks who automatically think of, you know, very traditional instruments in that way, with a lot of the stuff that you're potentially playing around with in the digital music space on that side?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question to answer. So I'll do my best to kind of pull it all together. So when we're thinking of the composers from the eras of the 80s and the 90s, and typically I'm speaking of Japanese composers like Shimomura and Koshiro, they were, and Hamauzi specifically, Hamauzi studied in Germany. He went to school in Germany, and he's born in Japan. Then he went to school in Germany, but he studied a lot of the Romantic and classical composers. And so a lot of these composers were influenced, actually, like Kondo, I would have to say, was influenced, and Hip Tanaka, who did Earthbound, was influenced by reggae. If you think about the Super Mario theme, that is a reggae type of sound. So it's not even classical. So then we move into Final Fantasy X era, and we have, or Kenji Ito and Amayuzu, and even Uematsu. And Uematsu was more like, he was influenced by a lot of progressive rock and other things. And so other things kind of come together. And so that I'm going to pull this together in its own right. The specific other composers all studied Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, Mussorgsky, Brahms, Schumann, those classical composers, and they fit these styles into what the chipset could do for its era and its time. Mm. So you're limited to these four channels, like a 2AO3 chip on the NES or the Game Boy, or the YM2612 for the Sega Genesis, and you're trying to emulate what these sounds are going to be. Perfect composer example. Koshiro he's known for Streets of Rage and Atrian Odyssey as well. But a lot of people know that he also did Beyond Oasis, which was supposed to be the equivalent to the rival of Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, and a little bit of Link's Awakening, but is that in terms of the adventure style. Well, Koshiro did this awesome type of brass, type of fanfare, more classical traditional sound, but everyone really sees what he did over on Streets of Rage, and it's that electric club beat sound, and he did his due diligence for that too. But see how he was able to kind of do two different styles at once. So the thing about that I learned in video game music is that it didn't come until the PS1, where there was Redbook Audio and different streaming things where you can actually implement live instruments, where even Nathan McCree, who did Tomb Raider 1996, was able to do that type of orchestral sound. And then Gary Scheinman and Richard Jakes did more of the first orchestras to be streamed on the game in the terms of like the Xbox for the Aliens game that escapes my mind. And so Attack All Humans, I believe, is the game. Mm. So when it comes to learning from those composers, yes, every typical composer goes to school to learn about those composers of those eras, Chopin, and like I said, the other classical composers too, Rameau. They are taking in the sound and then re-putting something else that can either fit on a sound chip from that era, and then coming back to see what it actually fits for what the game is asking for. And that's really how it comes together. But video game music is an amalgamation of all different music styles. Mm. If we hear anything from what it's supposed to be, like you look at the movement of cozy games is now lo-fi and ambient, to spaceship games, which was orchestral, but with the sci-fi. So you have synthesizer things, which will sound like Trent Reznor mixed with Hans Zimmer, and those type of approaches that come into play when you're doing it. But it really just depends on the game. And before, it used to depend on the chipset because of the limitations that you could do to make it sound as good as it could. Hopefully that answers it.
No, that was a beautiful explanation for all of that. That just blew my mind with the commentary about the reggae themes that I pulled in from. Because I don't think of that in that way, but now that you've done it, I can't remove that from my brain now, which is fantastic. I loved to hear you talk about the inspirations that a lot of folks are pulling into their compositions and the limitations that we see technologically from some of that space. Now you're working with clients who are working on every part of the spectrum now in terms of the technology space. Has that kind of liberated you to think even bigger about what you can and can't do from a music perspective, about like, okay, this person is asking me to pull in this kind of music for this section of a game or this part? Now that there kind of isn't as many limitations, does that give you too many things to think about, to work through, or does that really just kind of let your imagination run wild at this point?
It only liberates me due to a certain extent. And I still, the way that I write and the way that I approach the projects that I'm on is that I actually still think in the mindset of, this is a chips, there's still a limitation based off of what it's going to be played on. Mm-hmm. And I still also keep being in context. I don't want to have 100 tracks. I don't want to deal with that in terms of like things, problems that could come down the line, being able to build the game and it being compiled in a nice form. I know the ins and outs in terms of the efficiencies, but the liberation only comes from them trusting me first to know how I'm going to approach the music. And then the limitation comes from myself, because I have to think, what have I done before that I don't want to do again, but I still have a signature sound that I bring for what the game is asking me for. I'm mostly listening to, I'm psychically talking to what the game is telling me without hearing it. And it's formulating in my mind as I'm either playing it or I'm reading a game design document or I'm seeing different art assets that are being delivered to me.
I guess that was, yeah, that leads directly into the next question, which I think is fascinating too, which is like, I know I'm very visual, right? In the way that I learn, in the way that I process information, in the way that I become inspired by things. Music is often inspiration for the visual representation of the things that I wind up doing. What pieces of inspiration are you kind of pulling from, not only from, like you said, that kind of game design document that you usually get in the process of working, but do you recall a moment where there was, you know, you got the design doc and you're ready and you're kind of like thumbing through and you're looking through and you're like, all right, I kind of have an idea here. But then you get this like other secondary thing that is external that pulls in that's like, oh, this is perfect for this game at this moment. What is the inspiration process for you continue to look like? Because I'm sure, you know, when you were a younger composer in the space and younger artists in the space, you had so different versions of the pipeline that you did. And now, older and more seasoned, you have, you know, processes that go along with it that help with the efficiency part. Where does that all kind of come together for you when it comes to the soup of inspiration for you?
Really interesting that you say that, is when you've mentioned like younger, what I'm really doing is I'm actually tapping further into past like my time. I'm trying to remember what was the feeling, the excitement I got when I got a new game on Game Boy. What was the sound that was happening through when I was plugging my N64 in and pulling into the era of toys. And so now being here now is mostly my new toys are my instruments. I actually have like one on my neck. I have a right. So this is my toys are my instruments, and the inspiration comes from, what does it sound like and how much can I get out of this toy that I can play with to come up with something that I haven't done before? Because everything, I guess in the terms of when I was getting started in the industry, a lot of the toys were software based, so virtual instruments and things like that. And I still use them and I still need them. I definitely rely on those to an aspect. But now I really enjoy collecting different instruments and seeing musically what can come from them that's within me. I look inward more and go back to try to remember what it was like to be in that childlike phase, because that's the biggest imagination that you have in your life. Once you grow and you become like you go through things and there's just a little bit of jadedness that might come with it. But with some of those experiences, you are able to build some perspicuance to understand what you're going to create later on. And with those experiments become a little bit more passion that's refueled, and excitement that will mostly come through in the music as well.
That's cool. Cause I think about that all the time of like, what is that mental elasticity that you continue to kind of build as you get older? So you don't get stuck in your ways, or you don't get stuck in a particular space. Like how hard is it to kind of stay out of the zeitgeist of trends in that way? Cause I feel like that's also a thing that a lot of the creative spaces now really lean heavily into of, oh, this thing is hot, so everybody has to do this thing or that thing. Oh my God. How has it been kind of navigating that space too?
It hasn't been easy. And I fought it for a lot of years because it's, you know, you're told do this so you can get work, and this is how you become this, and this is how you become that. And everything, like I said, even I had to just think about the times before where I just didn't fit in, and realizing it's okay not to. It wasn't that I was trying to purposefully stand out. I just realized I was unique. And so it wasn't until I went to a Game Awards as many years ago, and I remember thinking, dang, there's a lot of good studios that was up for a Game of the Year award, and they didn't win. They were nominated, but there was others that I'm sure were probably in honorable mentions. And I went home that night and I thought about it again, and I thought, but they kept doing their own thing. And that's when it clicked. And I've stuck to just remembering thinking, I just got to keep doing my own thing. And the navigation actually began from there. I want to say the year was 2017. I think is when it clicked for me that I'm not going to be trying to keep up with these trends. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. And it's very hard. Like, I have a very niche sound. I don't sound like anyone in the industry, but now I've been other peers and colleagues in the industry have now deemed me as the Swiss Army knife of video game composition. And when I did my demo reel recently, I think a week or two ago, it showed even more so that it's been vindicated that by others that they see I have a really good grasp on many genres to navigate it the way that I choose to. And it's the path that's least walked or hasn't been walked before, but I'm okay creating the path for myself.
I love to hear that is not only a moniker that you've been bestowed, but it's also, it fits. Like I was watching while doing some research for our conversation today, looking at your demo and seeing all the pieces of works that you've done over so many vast games. You shipped over 20 games, 20, what, 20, 25, 27?
25. Yep.
Like 25 games you shipped already. And seeing that demo reel and being like, oh, all right, wrestling game kind of music. Like, you know, for versions of games that it is very different in the ways that you would think about that composition, the way you think about the music, and even within a game, the variation that happens from scene to scene, from level to level of what that means. When you're building out the full suite for a game like that, if you're tasked with doing that kind of work, how hard is it to kind of stay consistent within a feel, while also giving enough variation that is supposed to kind of excite or inform the player? Because music is a big part of the, the way that games come across to players. Like, there is a level of excitement when you hear that swell of music pop up when things are supposed to happen. Or it's giving you that tell that, like, danger is around the corner. Right. How do you consistently feel? How do you kind of keep the thematic layers consistent while also knowing that players are going to potentially be touching all of these pieces and kind of giving that information through the music that you're making?
The cool thing is, like I said, being the player first. So by me being that, I'm able to just write with that in mind and then build upon that. And I know the basics of most, then I drop into the training for music school, which is, you know, at least build a proper theme, then all the tools that come with revising those themes. And I don't have to rethink the wheel or reinvent it. So I just, at those moments, I just utilize what those tools are if I'm stuck normally. If I'm not, usually it comes with a feeling. And if normally I've been streaming my game composing process on Twitch for about 8 or 9 years now. And so what I've learned, I think, the past 5 or so years is that if I write something and it comes out and I like it, I just keep it and I move on. But if I write something and I get goosebumps, I know that I'm doing something right. Mm. And it's something that I feel like it's a divine type of energy that is coming through me that is saying, you were meant to write this. This is how it's going to go, so on and so forth. And so with putting all the pieces together of being a player first, understanding where it needs to, how it needs to feel as a player, and then utilizing the knowledge that I have, along with the feeling of, I think, the whole musician muse within that you typically would have or not have, but just the feeling of the proper energy, right? And in addition to doing the childlike process of having tapping into that imagination and that feeling and that passion, conflated will usually result in the navigation being a little bit more seamless. The only thing I needed to learn, I guess, maybe the fifth year of my career, was that not to be married to what I write, because it's not just about me. It's about all the art forms coming together, the writing, the programming, the design, the environment, and it has to be integrated properly in order for it to tell the story. Even though my process is 50% of the experience, which is a big chunk of a percentage, I still am cognizant of this may not work, and that's okay. There's others. I got one divine feeling. If I still remember the childlike moments of that, if I still have that inspiration, if I still know the knowledge of what I've learned, this is just going to enhance the feeling through the feedback that comes through, because it wasn't meant to be that. It's supposed to be elevated. So then I just take a different approach of my mentality and shift it.
Mm. I love hearing you talk about that kind of divine feeling moving through you to get to a space where you know you're kind of nailing it. It feels very akin to that sports analogy of being in the zone. Mm-hmm. Is there a zone for music makers in that way too, where you're just like, oh, I instantly, like, I'm hearing this thing and this is sparked to that moment for me to be like, all right, we're taking that. Is there a zone in that space for you too, where you're like, everything is pulling in at the right and perfect time?
Yeah, there is a zone, and I've actually discovered a two zone part. And so there's a zone where you are emotionally pulled in one way, whereas in, you know, if you're just trying to be, if you might be in a relationship and things are, you know, you're going through, creatives are very emotional, more emotional beings than I think. Everyone's a creative in their own right, but there are levels. And so if you're in a relationship, then the zone, if that person happens to be your muse, then there's a zone that can come from a good place or a dark place. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been in both places. The good place is a great place to be when you're there, but to do it from a dark place, most people, I feel, might miss it, but it's because it depends. If no one told you or you don't know where, then it could be hidden. And so, but to be in the dark place and pull from the zone, things happen to be very interesting musically that come out. And for some people, what I've realized is that when I've heard different stories, I think the only way you really know this is if the composer told the story. And so, because it's very rare where he's in, like, say I sent you a piece and you're like, man, this is amazing, I love it. You don't know what zone that typically came from.
Right.
There. And so if I told you, yeah, I was on the moon and it was great and so on and so forth, you're like, oh, yeah, I hear it, right? Because now you're relating to something I told you. But in terms of you just pulling in the art for yourself and thinking, I wonder if, and then thinking it, like, where that person might be in their life, then you can kind of get that. And I loved doing that in school with music history, when I would hear a piece and then hearing the story after versus hearing the story and then hearing the music. Mm. So the place of the dark area when you're in a depression of some sort is very different place from writing the music from a place when you're in a good place mentally in space in your life. And I would just say, tread lightly in both areas.
That's
tread lightly in both areas.
No, I appreciate that, because I don't think, like, I know when I want to. I know when I'm feeling in a good mood to be creative, mm-hmm. and know when I'm not. And it is immediately evident to anyone who is watching the show or listening to my voice of being like, maybe Kylie's heart wasn't in it that day when he did that recording. And it feels like in the kind of best ways, work like the work that you do, not to say that you can cover it up with the work that you're doing, but it is a space like you talked about, the receiver doesn't know until you tell them. Mm-hmm. But the beauty sometimes. Of the music still comes through in all of those ways in both versions, right?
Right.
So that's right. Awesome to hear that that's a part of it. And also it makes me feel like folks who are doing this kind of work are hopefully more in tune with their own personal emotions to taking that audit to be able to capture that and then kind of move that energy out in a creative creative space.
Right.
That's awesome to hear that that's like a part of that part of the process for you. I love that. Think about the parts of, you know, all the training that you have, all the work you've done over the years, what are the pieces that you're most proud of? What are the things that you're like, man, that was a really special moment for what I'm trying to do in this industry?
Yeah, there's reflecting on some of the things. I think the past year I've been surprised listening back to it and thinking, oh, I wrote that. And while you're writing some things, you don't think, at least for me, I don't think that it's, remember, I'm seeing it as an entire art form that is going to be implemented for a different player experience to enhance their lives and be their soundtrack for their world and their nostalgia in some coming years. So for me to think back when something is done and I'm hearing it on Tidal or I'm YouTube or something comes up or on a radio station listening and I'm thinking, oh, I know that. it's kind of Wildstar. And the pieces, I think mostly now I'm appreciating are different pieces from a ground, different pieces from the game reality. Even the most recent soundtrack that I've won an award for, which is On the Peril of Parrots as well. And some of the mobile games that I've done, which is Super Happy Fun Block. I remember when I hear those things, I'm like, oh, I was studying this piano piece here. Oh, I was going to Indiecade at that time, or I was living in this municipal at this period. And there are just those are the moments that they have specific memories, or, oh, I was going through this breakup, or I was in this depression of this area, and I could hear it, and and I can tell. But thankfully, it doesn't pull me to those areas of a woe is me place. It just gives me the appreciation of, okay, I'm thankful I got through that. And wow, I'm really cool. It's really cool to know that I even pulled that off. And I'm really glad that I kept doing my own thing. I stuck to the sound that I like, and I'm hoping to change the perspective of what game music sounds like for the next decade or more in terms of the longevity and the legacy that I can put forth.
That's amazing. I mean, it's one of those things too. I think you know, as a person who is also in that space of trying to figure out, like, what is the kind of legacy you leave behind with the work that you do?
Yeah.
It's awesome to talk to other folks who are like, well, I understand where this is going to lay in terms of the overarching kind of narrative of the work that you do. And it is. I love that piece you just talked about of saying, like, your music is going to be a part of the nostalgia that goes along with an experience that folks will have while playing. That is such a rare thing to be able to say that you can do, right? That you are right. One of the folks who is kind of laying that on the table for folks in that way. What are some of the pieces or some of the music that you remember from your game playing life that has stuck with you in that way that was like, oh, anytime I hear this, this brings back a great memory for me in that way?
Yeah, as almost like bring tears to my eyes thinking about it, because one thing just mainly just stuck with me was there's different pieces of music in Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, which is my first Zelda game. And there is the, it's a different, it's like a lullaby sound, I think, that when you're going to Bow Wow's house or where Bow Wow is in the area, it's just a really beautiful soliloquy that happens. And then there's James Bond on the Game Boy as well, that I remember. There's where you get this specific diamond with all these women in the thing, and it's the one piece of music that's really different from any other James Bond music that's happening in the game, and it's really cool. And then there's Turok game on Game Boy as well, where it brings me memories of just being on the sixth floor in a high rise in Chicago at my grandmother's house and playing, hearing Batman Forever and Turok, you know, and just being really, really happy and just really being blissful. And there's Diddy Kong Racing, where I would just remember kind of bouncing around and playing, you know, like with the music that's there. And then, like I said, even when living with my father at the time, I just, when I discovered that the, that you have actual video game soundtrack on a game disc if in with the PlayStation. So if you on the idle on Tomb Raider 1996, if you press it and then you open the lid and then it would go to the CD player and then you put it down and you skip the first string, you have the entire soundtrack. But by playing the game, you would listen to those orchestral pieces that would go along with this empty cave of traveling. And it was just, that's the type of nostalgia and feeling that I think I'm pulling from in those respects. And like I said, even with, like I said, with Yuzo Koshiro playing Beyond Oasis, hearing, going through this world and hearing all these type of orchestral fanfares on the Sega Genesis, that's really masterful stuff. that's really cool. I mean that's, it's just amazing in terms of those things. And then even in my early 20s or mid 20s and discovering games like Eternal Ring, and then hearing the very eclectic, not traditional type of game music, but now is regarded in terms, I believe, one of the same composers through the franchise. I remember doing a showing the comparison. I said before there was Elden Ring, there was Eternal Ring. And even though the titles may not match based off of, I haven't played Elden Ring yet, sadly, but the premise of the game in terms of, at least the Eternal Ring focuses on rings, and maybe I think Elden Ring could too, but I know there's a different impetus that goes along with it based off of, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien and that whole lore. Yeah. So those are my experiences, and there's so much more like I could list, I'm thinking, but those are the ones that I was thinking about mostly as I'm talking to you right now.
That's rad. Because I you know, we are all amalgamations of all the things that we absorb, right? So it's like you're pulling in all of that stuff. I want to know what it's like to be able to see the music matrix. So, like, I think when folks think about the creative process, like, I think about it when I ask folks who make film or other, or like folks who are beat makers specifically, and like I see them crate dig, right? They're looking through the crates of what they want. They have their kits and all that stuff. And I'm always fascinated by the understanding of like, oh, I have 72 808s in here. I know 808 number 3 is the one that I want. I have all of these hi-hats. I know a hi-hat 35 is the one that I want. I feel like that's like looking into the music matrix. Like you have an understanding of this, of these pieces of instrumentation that are so different and similar at the same time, but you know how they fit into a space. What does that look like for you? Because you're starting from the base of the base of the process, right? You're thinking about timing and signature and scope and theme, and then pulling in all of those instruments to make a composition to composition. What does that look like for you when you're like, all right, I have the design doc. I know where to pull from here, here, and here. What's that look like for you?
Honestly, I don't have one. And that's because I really don't know. And that's because every game is different.
Yeah.
And so I approach every game as it should be. It's something that there are some influences, yes. So I'll use Sunken Stones as an example, working with Glenn Henry from Sprite Wrench. And when he tasked me and said, you know, we're going to try and pull the sound, want it to be more Caribbean, I said, oh, great. We're going to get rid of this Western pirate sound. I'm all for it. Mm. But then, so I'm typically, I got my little studies that I do here. And I got my Sid Meier's Pirates on PSP. I got my Legend of the Black Buccaneer. I've got my Escape from Monkey Island, and I got my Rogue Galaxy, and then I got Risen 2 on the PS3. But those are already done. So me being my mom's side of being from Barbados, then I at least know I have something within me that I can get out through DNA. Yeah. But I really don't know what it's supposed to be. So I guess I just rely on what was done before and what can I do that sounds different, and then pull it from there. But like I said, the instruments help me do that. So as long as I have the right instrumentation, then I build the sound palette. Then I know the key signature that I may start in. And then from there, what I focus on is texture, and I have a good grasp of rhythm. And so I know that rhythm is the foundation of music, because without rhythm, you don't have a melody, because you have to have a rhythm to sing the melody. So texture is usually something that I can find quicker if I need to. And then rhythm comes about it in its own way, because I want people to feel it. And that's the best way to feel it, is if they're doing this or they have some kind of movement that's going on through their body, then that's when I know it's going to be built upon that. But really, honestly, I don't have it can't be a pull to every time.
Sure.
This is something I struggled with before, because I think the sound of orchestral music blew up because it did well for a decade starting from the 2000s. But then now we're in the different decade and we're still trying to do that stuff. But we don't have to. And we've already done the hybrid style. So now there needs to be something different, period. But that's what games should have always been, is that so if we're pulling, yes, we're going to pull from our libraries that we know will work, because it's really just what sounds good and what's going to mix well. I guess I should start from there. Yeah. But in terms of building it and, oh, this is the exact harmonica I'm going to use for this one, or this is that. That's the whole limitation thing that I'm not interested in. It's like, I don't have templates. That's why I said it's mostly a sound palette. Yeah. And I talked about this briefly in my Questlight Pocket presentation. And I think that's the most coolest part, is because you're rebuild. Even though it takes more work to rebuild, and trust me, I'm going through it right now. I have to start over. But it always turns out great. It always turns out great. So I love that I don't have to necessarily have the go-tos. And there's, like I said, there's a couple of them that I would. But then sometimes that what I thought would be the go-to ends up being replaced or not used.
Yeah. That shows again, like, the breadth and depth of your knowledge base too, I think is super important, right? Because it is a look into, you know, you have the world of instrumentation at your fingertips. Why do we truncate ourselves to these very kind of formulaic ways of thinking about it? And I love that you poked at it that way. I got two questions left for you before we let you go. Time has flown. I swear, it's like when you have these conversations with dope folks, it's like time just magically just goes away. Two things that I want to know before we let you go today. One,
sure.
What's a music space that you haven't necessarily played in yet that you would like to? Is there like a genre or a kind of instrumentation or collection of sounds that you want to play around with that you haven't had a chance to yet? And secondly, what are you listening to right now? What are some of the music inspirations? What are some of the things that you're like, you know, chilling in the car, on the train, listening to, and you're like, oh, this is hot?
Yeah. And so the musical space that I haven't done is the ones that I've yet to do. It's a very political answer, but it's not something that I can answer, because it's not something that I'm looking. It's like, I'm not looking for, I want to tackle that genre. Huh. It's mostly because I said I'm servicing the entire art form. It's not just about me and what it is. My stuff is 50% of the experience. And so what I'm mostly curious about is how am I going to be building different dynamic music systems to enhance these different experiences for the player. So I guess the player in me is mostly, I wonder if it would sound like, which goes back to my childhood of what can I create? You know, my mom would tell me, go and be constructive. But you don't have money, you want to make this toy, but you have an empty tissue box and you have this thing. So you decide to make a ship out of the tissue box and something because you think that you can. So you just try to do it and your straw is your mast and pull it together. So the space of it is mostly, okay, well, what instrumentations or what sound of it am I going to create that's going to fit and be sonically great for the game that I want to, that I see. And so I'm hoping that there's, what excites me more is the fun, because that's what I believe video games to be, the fun. And if I could find the fun, then I think everything else will lock into place. And that ties into, what am I listening to? I'm actually listening to a lot of different video game music right now, from Xenogears to Final Fantasy 2 to Ark, Tonoklia, Ragnarok Online, Assassin's Creed, Brotherhood. It's all over the place. But that's because I have this radio station that plays nothing but video game music 24/7. So anything that comes on is just coming to me, and it's, I was like, oh, I'll hear it and I'll take it in. I'm like, oh, I've heard that sound. Okay, I'm doing this, so I do that, and I do this, and I do that. But it's, in terms of things that are sticking out, there's not much that I'm focused on, because I think, like I said, I've got some projects that I'm gearing up for, and I'm vacillating between where is that inspiration going to be. And so my instinct's telling me the new instrumentation, like I was saying, to pull from, like building a new sound palette again and what that's going to be like. And it's been really solid to work for me in that respect too, especially, and it was received when I gave the talk at GDC last year and when I'll be doing it again at Pocket Gamer this year. So I know that it's effective, and I'm going to go with the instinct. And I think that comes, like I said, come back to keep doing my own thing.
Yeah. Well, fam, it was worth the wait. I'm so happy that we finally got a chance to do this and to finally you on the show. I could talk to you about this stuff for hours because it's so nerdy and great. I love it. I love it, the fact that it's like, again, I am folks who make music in my mind are magicians in lots of different ways. I know that's a very ephemeral way to think about it, but the layers that you bring to a project and to kind of, again, give you that space for nostalgia and for empathy and for fear, like all of those emotional palette alongside that musical palette mash so well. And it's so wonderful to have someone like you in the space who has taken the time to do the work, to remember that history, to have your own signature style and build that body of work over a decade plus to be able to do the work that you do. It is a blessing to have you in my circle of people who I know. It is fantastic to see you continue to grow in this space. And it just makes me so happy to know that the care and lovely energy that you bring to all of these projects is getting seen and heard by millions of people around the world. I just got to thank you again for spending some time with me. And before we let you go, let folks know where they can find more of your work and where they can get in contact with you.
Thank you so much, Khalid. Thank you. Like I said, it's an honor. I've been wanting to be on the Spawn on Me podcast for so long. So it feels great and to be here, and hopefully I get to return and talk more 1,000% in the future and all those cool things. But yeah, you can find me at chasebathia.com. And my work is on Bandcamp, chasebathia.bandcamp.com. And then you can, all the streaming platforms, Apple, Tidal, Spotify, Deezer, Pandora, all those streaming platforms, you can find that stuff there. And Git is also Twitter X, you know, I'm posting where the updates and things are typically happening too. And yeah, this is where you can find what's going on and listen to the work that I'm doing.
So we got to get, so the real deal is I got to figure out a way to get you into Spawnies. That's the way we got to make that happen. We need some dope musical treatments for the Spawnies in a real way. So I'm going to bug you offline for that conversation. But everybody at home, please go follow Chase. Chase's work is brilliant. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been killing it, knocking out of the park with every project that he has been on. So make sure you're going and giving him love. And please, 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 definitely go support dope folks who are making great music. I think that's a big overarching conversation that we have here on our show. It's a thing that we try to do in the ways that we can, and we want to continue to foster what that looks like in the greater creative space. So please, please, please remember to do that as well. And we have more Spoil to Me coming up, so hang out for a bit. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. Oh, go ahead, Chase.
One, just want to say congratulations to you for the 10 years. You've been rocking it. It's doing so much. I've been watching your career and everything grow with this as well. So big love to you, and keep on rocking.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that a ton. Again, we rock. We make sure that we're making it happen, and we have dope folks coming with us along for the ride, as always. Again, thanks so much for being with us today. And everybody, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.